Hello everyone. I'm making this video as a response to Bernard's video. I think the title was Pro MRA Party, or I don't even remember, but I'm going to post it as a video response, and if he decides not to accept that video response, I'll post the I'll do this anyway. I'll post the video I'm responding to in the description box. But his video, the one I'm responding to right now with this one, is a response to my right-wing right-wing politics is another bastion of misandry video. So, I want to first address the first claim that he made in his video, that I'm propagandizing or mischaracterizing what he says, which is patently false, perhaps, and I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt on this, but I doubt that this is the case. Perhaps he is mistaken in understanding what I'm saying here. He's saying that he doesn't support the drug war, that he doesn't support, for example, foreign aid to countries like Israel, and so on and so forth. And he's saying that by me characterizing him as somebody who does in fact support that, and I'll explain how he supports that, that I'm participating in propaganda techniques or what have you. Let me explain to you how Bernard does in fact, at the very least, is a proponent to these policies that have wrought havoc on the well-being of men all around the world, and here in the West and in the Middle East as well. Well, first, I'm going to read to you a quote on Bernard's video titled Future Topics, and he says, quote, "I've made 1,100 plus videos and not a single sentence defending the drug war. GOP politicians doing things conservatives don't want is true. Nixon was an embarrassment, as evidenced by the EPA, affirmative action, the escalation of the drug war." And then he goes on to say, "Yikes, our jobs as conservatives is to bring Romney to the right. It may not work, but it's our only hope to get the radicals out of the White House. Weaklings versus radicals. Which one will you take? I'll take the weaklings and hope America has no choice," end quote. So, as you can see, here, this is a supposed conservative, and he's already rationalizing away his vote for Romney. That we all know this is who Bernard is gonna vote for, because of course Ron Paul isn't gonna get the nomination. So, when he does extend to him that vote, notice how he's already setting it up as a failure, characterizing him as a weakling, Romney, characterizing Romney as a weakling. And the left-wing politicians as radicals. There's a definite purpose to this tactic, all right? What you do when you characterize Mitt Romney or any politician like him, he voted for McCain as well and voiced support for Rick Santorum, which would be a nightmare in the presidential office, but that's a whole other story. But when he characterizes Mitt Romney as a weakling and Obama as a radical, what he's doing is essentially he's depriving Mitt Romney of his agency, you know, whatever screw-ups are going to come, and he's going to characterize them as screw-ups if in fact Romney does get the presidential nomination, and if he wins, when he gets into office and does not deliver on the promises of you know, the right-wing conservative talking points that he's doling out right now, when he doesn't deliver on those promises, they're going to chalk it up to, well, Romney isn't strong enough. He's a weakling. And so they deprive him of his agency in order to legitimize and explain away the mistakes. And I put mistakes in quotation marks, because this is just Romney behaving as he's supposed to do. This is Romney behaving as everybody who has critically scrutinized it on their own knows he's going to behave. This is what has us locked in this never-ending political loop protocol, you know, within the left-right paradigm that essentially breeds apathy and breeds, you know, this is why voter turnout is decreasing in record numbers, because people are seeing it for what it is. And you have these people like Bernard that want to be willfully ignorant and want to continue believing in this facade, in this political structure that provides to us no recompense, no way to discuss and mitigate the political issues of our time. It's just a bunch of politicians saying the right thing, a bunch of foolish morons like Bernard, essentially eating it up and pretending that, you know, pretending that these politicians have any degree of legitimacy. And then when they get into the White House, they don't do anything. They don't do anything of substance. Look at the liberals with Obama, for example. Obama has essentially adopted the military policy of George Bush. And, you know, while Obama was campaigning, all we heard from him was, I'm going to end this war on terror, I'm going to end the war in Iraq, I'm going to end the war in Afghanistan. And now, he, you know, that he's essentially reflecting and mirroring George Bush's war policy. You have the liberals making all sorts of explanations and legitimizing this in all sorts of ways in order to cover up the egg on their face. And everybody else, you know, everybody else who exists outside of this political nonsense, this political farce and facade, understands that, you know, they're a bunch of fools. They're a bunch of fools legitimizing their stupidity, and somewhere deep down they have to know that this kind of stupidity is present, that they're willingly participating in it, pretending to see things that aren't there. This is the type of stupidity that passes for political discourse in America today, and the conservatives take part in it just as much as the liberals do. Here you have somebody, in the case of Bernard, who puts on this front of, oh, I'm conservative, I'm for, you know, I have libertarian values, I want the government out of our business. And what's going to end up happening is when the libertarian candidate that he supposedly supports fizzles out, because as I've said in my video, the right-wing political infrastructure is not designed to accommodate these type of libertarian constitutionalist conservative candidates. In fact, it's designed to alienate and marginalize those type of candidates. When the political infrastructure that he's selling to us as being optimal for male empowerment or male equality, when it rejects these candidates, when Paul fizzles out, and excuse my dog if you hear her in the background, she's running around. When Paul fizzles out, when Romney gets in and behaves as he's designed to, as a career politician would, he's going to make excuse after excuse as to why Romney was a weakling, or us conservatives just didn't cajole him enough, just didn't coddle him enough, treat him properly so that he could see our point of view. This is the type of simpering worldview that has put us into this political lethargy, this political catharsis that we can't seem to get out of. Everybody knows that there's something irreparably wrong with this political system, and yet some of the biggest adherents to it are the same ones that purport to want to establish or usher in some kind of radical or revolutionary change within this broken system. The mechanics don't work. Something new, and I don't know what yet. I find this kind of attitude within the men's rights movement that everything has to be spelled out for them, that every possible ramification of every possible new way forward or new direction has to be spelled out for them by me or some other MRA that's making a outside of the box claim or suggesting an outside of the box course of action. This is something that is indicative of our movement's inability to think on its own. You know, I think we need to move away from that. We need to start asking and questioning things in a fundamentally different way than we are now. You know, needing somebody to lay out each and every possible solution, every alternate scenario that could possibly go wrong with every solution posited. It's just, oh, it's frustrating. You know, so with that, you know, with that said, I want to basically reiterate that what people like Bernard and conservatives like him do is they claim to be about libertarianism, about limited government, about not expanding and not creating bureaucracy, and so on and so forth. And you know, they might dole out a token vote for Ron Paul or some other libertarian candidate. When that fizzles out, they vote for Mitt Romney, And then that gives them the plausible deniability when somebody points out, look what your conservative party is doing. It's essentially warehousing men for slave labor in prison industries. And this is misandry against men. That gives them the plausible deniability they need. They say, I'm not for that. But at the same time, they extend their votes to politicians that are for that. And so it's tacit approval of these things. And this is why I most certainly do accuse Bernard of being for the prison industry, the bureaucracy that follows it, the harm that it subjects men to, and for foreign aid. And that aid could be going to Americans. That aid could be benefiting American men. That aid could go to prostate cancer research. But he wants to extend his vote to politicians that most certainly will institute these bureaucracy-inducing bills, this military expansion, and all that kind of stuff. So with that point out of the way, I want to next address this meme of the lesser of two evils. This goes back to the apathy that we find in modern political infrastructure, specifically in conservative modern political infrastructure. They're too lazy to visualize a radical change in politics, and so they exist within this system that they know is unable to render any kind of significant assistance in terms of achieving equality for men. And so they say, this is the lesser of two evils. And they essentially tell you, right to your face, that they are upholding an evil. They are upholding a less than ideal scenario for men. And it's not a case of, you know, a lot of these people, they say that politics is the art of choosing what is possible. what is possible isn't benefiting anybody. Okay, and so at a point when it becomes when it gets to the point where what is beneficial to the general electorate or to men in general is no longer possible within this political framework, the only thing left to do is to simply refuse and to hope that when sufficient numbers of people start refusing, and these are the actual smart, educated people, and I'm not talking about school educated, but the people who have actually critically analyzed this have come to the conclusion almost universally that this system is irreparably broken. You know, the smart, informed electorate is the one that is taking an honest look at it and realizing that no measurable success can be garnered within this political framework. So this excuse of voting for the lesser of two evils, this meme that's been going around, is essentially rationalizing away failure. So now the next thing that I want to cover is the one legitimate point that I think he raised in his video, and that was when he was responding to my claim that the right has to be able to show, independent of the left, that it doesn't perpetuate misandry. You know, when I was saying that you can't simply point to the left and say, look at what the left does in order to justify that men should support the right wing as the party of choice, so to speak, for mitigating men's issues. He made the counterclaim that the conservative right isn't for men. It can't be pro-male. It's neutral, if anything. That it's not pro women, that it's not pro male, that it's just about giving the money back to the people, which I think is fine in theory, but we all know that doesn't go down in practice. We can look at the issue of selective service. No right wing politician in their right mind is going to start insisting that women start signing up for selective service. Just like men are required to in order to gain the vote at the age of 18. No right-wing politician is going to suggest that. They can talk all they want about how they want to benefit, how they don't favor anybody, so on and so forth, but they most certainly do favor people. And in an issue like selective service. We're talking about the lives of men that are at stake here. You know, of course, the draft isn't in place now, but who knows what's going to happen in the future. So the right most certainly does play favorites. And you can talk about the issue of men are better suited to war and all that. But to be honest, you know, I honestly don't care. I honestly don't care. If you're going to have selective service for one gender, you're going to have to, if the right wing is in support of true equality for all, you're going to have to require women to do the same thing. I'm certainly not going to fight in any war, no matter what, and no matter who tells me to do so. So I don't care about these wars being fought in the Middle East and about achieving freedom for Iraqi women and so on and so forth. So, you know, if you're going to have men doing this, and this is men's, as I said, this is male life that is at stake here, because men die in war. This isn't some kind of issue that there's some trivial issue here. What's really at stake, and I find it incredible that we live in a society that can demand that men sign up for this selective service, even if it's at this point just a token gesture. But we all know what that token gesture can lead to if there's ever an outbreak of war, you know, a significant, a major outbreak of war. We all know what that token gesture is going to lead to. We all know what the purpose of that token gesture is. To catalog and index the amount of men that are there ready in the United States population to be used as cannon fodder. And so the right most certainly does play favorites, because I guarantee you, you will not find any major conservative political contender talking, probably any Republican politician at all, talking about the equal responsibility that women have to sign up for selective services. And this is just one of the many issues. This isn't the only one. You know, I can discuss them further, but I don't want to take too long on this video. So these are the two main issues that I want to discuss on this video. And you know, he brought up the issue of the MRA party, and you know, we can have an MRA lobby, but then you would have to strain every possible bill through the filter of whether or not it benefits men. And once again, that goes back to Bernard's claim that, you know, the true way forward, or the true solution to these problems, is to not look at anybody with any favoritism and just ask ourselves what's going to benefit everybody. Well, that relies on a rather, I think, childish and simple understanding of modern politics. People are not going to stop lobbying. Feminists are not going to stop lobbying. Feminists are not going to stop lobbying for women. I mean, do you think that all of a sudden we're going to exist in this magical, ideal political world where women and don't lobby for themselves on their own behalf? You know, and that's something that I think is markedly different than extending your vote to the lesser of two evils. I mean, this is a political fact. This is how politics operates. We will never get rid of lobbies, unless, of course, we just make lobbying illegal. But I don't understand, and I don't see how under the Constitution you could essentially say that you can't lobby government. Perhaps you can place restrictions on donations, money, that kind of thing. But it's just not going to happen. Lobbying isn't going to go away, and women are most certainly going to lobby on their own behalf. And due to the in-gender preference that women have for their own gender, and that men have for the female gender, we are at no point in the near future going to come across a new breed of politician that is treating everybody like an individual. No, politics revolves around the female, or at least modern politics does. So we need bold and sweeping and comprehensive, outside of the box thinking to approach this political problem. And this is what I'm talking about, where men need to essentially infiltrate political systems and use them to their own advantage. Male lobbies doesn't even have to be a coordinated, focused male lobby, although we can have something like that, you know, an official male lobby. That would be, I think, great. Men essentially advocating for their own interests within the political framework, while at the same time refusing to affiliate with any political party. You know, that way we can essentially pimp these parties for all that they're worth. We can start getting them to work for us. So, you know, I have no problem with a male lobby, but at the same time, this isn't something that has to be organized. Or I should reiterate, this isn't something that has to be organized either. This can crop up all on its own in isolated packets, while at the same time having distinct groups of an official male lobby. Something like that can take place. I'm just drawing up a rough sketch here. So, I've talked for a while now. I think I'm going to end this video, and we'll see what he has to say in response to this. Thanks for watching.